It's always great to meet new friends. It's one of the privileges of my office. We get to do that from time to time, meet new friends. And it's a great privilege to meet you. I appreciate your invitation to come and share and worship with you and to bring a word of hope and liberation. Before I begin, though, I want to thank you for the warm welcome you have given me. This is one of the friendliest communities I've ever known. And I come from Nebraska, and we're known as Nebraska Nice. Sometimes you hear about Minnesota Nice, too, right? But we kind of pride ourselves on our niceness. And I would say you guys are nicer. You feed me salmon, grilled salmon when I arrive, and it's just lots of friendly greetings, and I'm grateful for that. I'm also a little bit mindful of, and a little bit apologetic. You know, in this transition, that transitions always bring joy, but also a little bit of pain. I've met Pastor Jim Norley and got to know him just a little bit during the interview process, and what a wonderful man he is. And one of the ways he's being wonderful is he's giving me some space to get oriented here and connect with people, which means he's absent from you. And I want you to know that I'm aware of that loss, and it'll just be a temporary one. He'll soon return back and re-engage with this congregation. So I apologize for taking Jim away, but he'll return. And again, I'm grateful to be here with you. This morning's gospel is known as a parable of judgment. A parable of judgment. It's a story Jesus tells to pass judgment on people, especially leaders who failed to be faithful to God's promises and God's purposes. Here, in today's story, Jesus condemns the leaders of the temple for their failure to produce a harvest of righteousness and loving kindness among the people under their charge. Instead, they've taken their leadership posts as an opportunity to feather their own nests and line their own pockets, all at the expense of the poor and the vulnerable in the land. They've turned God's house of prayer for all people into a den of thieves. Jesus pronounces judgment on these leaders by telling this story. But there's more going on here than judgment. Much more. More than failure. What this story unveils is a new beginning and life rising from the dead. The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. Jesus says, a new foundation. This was the Lord's doing, and it is amazing in our eyes. Indeed, it is amazing what the Lord has done. This cornerstone is the culmination of what God has done from the very beginning of God's dealings with the people. And Jesus spells it out for us in this story. He does so virtually step by step. As Jesus would say, those who have ears, let them listen. First, listen to the state of the vineyard that the landowner hands over to the tenants. The landowner has done it all. He's planted the vines, he's built the hedge, he's dug the wine press, and he's erected the tower. Everything the tenants need to produce a harvest, to flourish and to thrive in this vineyard is handed to them by the landowner. The tenants want for nothing. Next, listen to the landowner's patience. What patience he shows. What landowner would be so patient with tenants as this landowner has been? What landowner would send not just one or two or three, but more than a half a dozen servants to collect his share of the harvest. And each time they returned to him empty-handed, that is, if they've returned at all, since most have been stoned or killed by these violent tenants. What sort of landowner is this? It's important for us to understand that this is not SOP for absentee landowners in Jesus' day. Landowners were people. They were people with clout. They had ways of dealing with troublesome tenants and means to deliver swift justice. It's hard to imagine any landowner suffering this kind of abuse and disrespect for long, any more than moneyed interests in our world would long endure this. But this landowner's ways, they're not our ways. And sending servants is just the beginning of his patience. After the slaves are rejected one by one, he sends his son into harm's way, hoping that these violent tenants will respect him. They don't, of course. They are just as murderous with the son as they are with the slaves, if not more so. But this is their undoing, you see. The tenants imagine that they've now become landowners themselves. They think that by killing the son, they've gained his inheritance. But it's all a lie. They can't hold on to what does not belong to them. A day of reckoning is coming, and in time they will lose even their status as tenants. Even the chief priests and the scribes can see this. The tenants are destined to lose because they aren't the true owners. A day of reckoning has come. It's like the old saying, you can't take it with you. In the end, we all of us, turn out to be tenant farmers who labor on leased ground and live on borrowed time. In the end, we're all beggars, as Martin Luther said on his deathbed. In the end, all things return to their rightful owner, the only true owner there is. It didn't have to go this way for the tenants. That's the great tragedy here and why judgment must be pronounced. And it doesn't need to go this way for us either. What this parable declares is that we need not seize control of the vineyard, of what does not belong to us, in order to get our due, in order to flourish in this life. The life we have comes to us as a gift from the landowner. The vines are planted for us, the hedge built for us, the wine press dug, the tower erected, all for us. Meanwhile, our landowner is so patient with us, so anxious for us to get on board with the program, so eager to be generous. One might think him a fool for bending over backwards to keep relationship with the tenants intact. But the landowner wants nothing more than for us to labor in his vineyard and to enjoy the fruits of the harvest. That's the kind of fool he is. All the landlord wants is to be generous. Which brings us back to that stone, the rejected stone. It is now the cornerstone, the foundation of a new creation where all wrongs can be righted and all things can begin again. when it comes to generosity, our landowner, he takes it up a notch. He doubles down. Not only does he endure the abuse of the slaves, but he suffers the murder of his son also. But the landowner has a trick up his sleeve, which no one expects, no one anticipates. The trick is called Easter. The trick is resurrection from the dead. The trick is life given again. Nothing can stop this landowner's generous ways. With this stone set in place, the mischief of holy generosity, it only continues. As St. Paul puts it, where sin increased, there grace abounded all the more. As if we insist on tripping and falling over this stone instead of building upon it. But even then, even if we should fall, generosity awaits our return. Building upon this stone, the rejected stone, this is what Luther House is all about. And I imagine it's what Grace Lutheran Church is all about too. On our best days, when we keep the hope and the promise of the divine landowner in view, this is who we are. We seek to embody on the OSU campus the patience and the generosity of God. Our cornerstone in this work is our Tuesday come and go lunch. I'm persuaded this is the case. I'm just still learning about the ministry, but I think this is really our cornerstone. Because there we offer food and friendship free of charge. Free of charge. And we take all comers. All comers. It doesn't matter who people are, whether they're American citizens or whether or not they are dreamers. It doesn't matter if they are majors in forest management or in natural resource management. Apparently, there is a rivalry on campus, a friendly rivalry between these two. But at our table, they sit and dine in peace and friendship. It doesn't matter where people are from, whether they're from China or Taiwan, from India or Pakistan. These longtime rivals, maybe enemies, are not so at our table. Doesn't matter what they believe or not believe, don't believe, whether they're Muslim or Buddhist or Christian or among the nuns. It doesn't matter what they've done or failed to do, whether they're teetotalers or potheads. They're welcome among us. If you show up, you'll be welcomed at Luther House as Christ himself. That's the welcome we've received. It's the welcome we must give. We offer a lot of other programs and do other things at Luther House, but come and go lunch. It sets the tone. It gets us out of ourselves, gets us out of our Lutheran bubble, out of the friendly confines of our churchy ghetto, where the harvest of God's righteousness and generosity, it stands out in bold relief. And as we welcome the stranger into our house, we see the grace in them as we hope they see it in us. We appreciate your longstanding support of our ministry. We appreciate your partnership. And we invite you to come by some Tuesday noon and join the feast. Come taste the fruits of the Lord, the landowner's harvest. Come feast upon God's grace with us. learn from us, just as our students learn from you when they come here to worship. Let us together learn and feast upon the holy generosity of God. Amen.